Sunday Mornings with Yellowknife Vineyard.
Coming together in worship corporately reminds us how we have missed bringing our praise and our worship to you. Free us up, Lord. Free us up to worship you wholeheartedly as we're still all slightly punch drunk. Bring us back, Lord. Smile on us. Turn your face fully towards us, Lord, as we turn our gaze fully towards you. So, amen. It's been a very interesting time to be away, and I'm very glad to be back with you. Apart from the blessing of being with Francois and Marie and little Elan, future Springbok rugby player, and seeing all of our other kids, including Emma, who we hadn't seen for 2 years. That's our youngest, who's now 22, which kind of dates me slightly, right? When your youngest is 22, you're going, oh, she's Lord, I'm getting on. Anyway, we saw all of them, and it was wonderful. We had a great time. I also had the privilege of watching Canada from the outside during a time of tumultuous discontent. And I really think we need to talk about these things. And without going into the events of the past few months in any great detail or even offering my own opinion, I want to offer some thoughts that I hope and pray will be helpful, mercy Lord, and will expand our imaginations for how we might bridge the gap in the societal divide and be one body. I've spoken into this thing twice previously, once right in the middle of COVID, just a message of unity, and then on Christmas Eve, the peacemaking message was pretty much to do with this as well. And my desire in doing this here, and I stand on what I'm calling holy ground, and I enter this territory with fear and trepidation, but it needs to be entered. But the desire is to bring us closer together while the many issues on the ground and also tragically many people in high places try to pull us apart. Please hear just that much. That's probably the most controversial thing I'm going to say. There are people in high places trying to pull Canadian society apart. The preach here is with thanks to Todd Rutkowski. As some of you know him and have met him. They were up here the week before we went into lockdown in March 2020. Todd is probably watching. If he's not watching now, he's going to watch a little later. I've borrowed much of this from some of his ramblings. So I need to say, Todd, all I've done is I've made it much, much better. It's much, much better. So the aim of this message is not to drop more chum into the cultural waters and awaken the shark-like nature within each of us. And all of us have a shadow side. All of us have a shadow side, including you and me. Not so much me, but certainly you. All of us have a shadow side, Mike, not just the politicians you don't like. All of us have a shadow side. And my hope instead is to offer a balm to help heal the open wounds of Canadian society, currently more than anywhere else in the world. And to ask Jesus to heal us of ourselves. I want to be honest about the fact that most of us I'm just not going to hold it together here, okay? I'm not going to hold it together. I'm going to be weepy at various times. Just pray with me. Most of us are still reeling in the wake of what now appears to be the aftermath of the pandemic, and we're slightly punch drunk from all that has gone down in the past 2 years. And just as we begin to emerge to breathe, we have Russia and the Ukraine on our doorstep over the polar cap. Do the core issues of our societal debate remain buried beneath the rhetoric of social media posts, our own preferred sources of information, and our own entrenched ways of thinking. I mean, where do you go to find truth now? Where do you go to find truth? It's almost like as Pilate said to Jesus, what is truth? Are the alternative media sources any more trustworthy collectively than legacy media? Really? Do they carry no bias? Sometimes extraordinarily strong bias. Do we really know, or more importantly, hear what the other person is saying? Are we actually able to hear one another in the white noise? Are we able to have conversations rather than fights? Are we the truth tellers and the others who see it differently from us are the deceived? Really? Seriously, are we so assured of our own discernment that we will turn friends into enemies without a second thought over our opinions? Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on us. It's funny, the last time I preached a coming home message from South Africa, it was in the aftermath of the discovery of the Kamloops graves. And I asked you to participate at that time by saying, Christ, have mercy on us, every time I said, Lord, have mercy upon us. And it seems to me that every time Anita and I go away, Canada falls apart, and I'm starting to think that it's only our presence in Yellowknife that's actually holding this place together. Imagine that. Can we do that again? When I say, Lord, have mercy upon us, will you respond, Christ, have mercy upon us? Let's do that now. Lord, have mercy upon us. We're 2 weeks into Lent, and this is a very good exercise to help us shift our focus from the geopolitics and international issues and internal issues of the day to the coming of the One. Look away from the strife of the world. Look away from the internal strife in this country, which I do believe is coming to an end, and look towards the cross of Jesus Christ. Because in Him there is certainty, and nothing else is certain. So can we find a way to unearth the core issues of the societal divide? Can we find some common ground on which to build a communal future in the middle of differing and sometimes polarizing perspectives? Is this not the Jesus way? Is that not the way of the Sermon on the Mount? And I do believe that we can find common ground. But it will require us first to take off all of our clothes. I'm waiting. You can keep them on. It's still minus 26 outside, and I really felt it coming back here. You can keep your clothes on for now. Most of us have entered this conversation as opinion makers and shapers, not as opinion seekers or even truth seekers. We are robed in absolute certainty as we enter a truly uncertain reality called the pandemic and everything politically that surrounds it. And I think that books will be written for a long time and television programs will run for a long time that will evaluate how we manage the pandemic. History will one day tell us with 2020 hindsight, and at that time, the real heroes and the real villains will be identified for sure. But for now, we live with our best insights, our opinions, and sometimes our best guesses. Whatever view you hold, we hold, and there are hundreds of views. Migrating towards a like-minded group is a common corollary for gaining a voice and also for being heard. As humans, we long to identify with a tribe that values and strengthens our perspective and our voice. There are tens of perspectives on this thing. It's not a binary choice of two groups. There are literally tens of opinions. But a process like this can amass us into various armies. And then once we've picked a side, the armies further serve to polarize us. Identifying with a tribe is a very, very natural process, and to an extent, it's understandable. It's even okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about our tribe, Vineyard, again, explicitly today. Because in choosing a tribe or a side, we become susceptible to demonizing the other side or the other tribe or the other views as a way to substantiate our view and our perspective and our side. And a posture like that works against any possibility of bridging the gap and finding common ground. It's about our posture towards God and towards one another. And if we take up that posture, we only serve to further isolate ourselves from each other. Lord, have mercy upon us. More of concern on issues like this one, issues that I'm going to call secondary. They're not central to the tenets of our faith, or what's called in theological circles adiaphora, is that we assure ourselves that God is on our side and not on the other's side, whichever side that us is. God is for us, whoever we are, and against them, whoever they are. Is that true? Is that really true? Lord, have mercy upon us. I've often wondered on a kind of lighter note how it is that Christian sports people pray for victory. Oh, Lord, yeah, I think we're going to beat these guys. I mean, I played competitive sport for 15 years. I prayed mostly for protection because rugby is a violent game. But I didn't pray for victory, even though I felt like it. I didn't. Because that is a really whacked New Testament understanding that God is for us and against them, when it is very clear that God is for all people, for all of humanity. And it's also clear that the God who we worship is very clear that there is not one righteous, no, not even one, not even me. And if you want to check out on that, just have a chat to Anita and she'll let you know. You see, people who have a genuine faith in God, people who are living a surrendered life to Christ, stand on all sides of this argument. The narrative does not fit neatly into an us and a them scenario. Declaring a side as God's side will not get us through this divide, just as declaring a politician as God's man or woman was never going to get us through this divide. Don't do that stuff. That path leads only to disappointment. Let me explain a little bit more by using one Old Testament story as an illustration. Norma read it to us earlier. It was over 1,000 years before the birth of Jesus. The people of Israel were led by this warrior king named Joshua. Yeshua, Jesus. That's the name, Yeshua, Jesus. He's a foreshadowing of the Lord. And it was a time of war, and people took sides, and they were put into tribes. And as Joshua walked the road to Jericho, described in Joshua 5:13, he saw a man with a drawn sword, a messenger of God, an angel. Very concerned, he asks the man, "Whose side are you on?" The man responds to the invitation to battle by saying, "Neither, I'm on no one's side. I am the commander of God's army." God is not on anyone's side. Let's make sure we're on God's side. And the man, in declaring himself the commander of the armies of God, is completely disinterested in choosing sides. His focus embodies an invitation to surrender. He invites Joshua to undress himself by taking off his shoes. There's a lot in that, but I'm not going to expand on it. He asks this warrior to humble himself, as he has asked me over many, many years, many times: humble yourself, be the least. Lay down your opinion. Lay down your right to be right. And he says to Joshua, "I'm not interested in sides." And he calls his focus to the fact that the ground that Joshua stands on is holy ground. We stand in this nation right now on holy ground. What will we do with it? What will we do with it? Lord, have mercy upon us. I don't believe that sides is God's thing in this societal debate. Just like many other debates. Like Joshua, I think it's more about the condition of our hearts that God is after most. In fact, I can say with some clarity that during the past 2 years when I have lashed out, and those times have been not that infrequent. Fortunately, you don't have to live with me, and neither does. When I have lashed out, what God has said to me time and again is, "Melt, how is your heart towards those who don't see it the same way that you do?" It is way, way beyond time for us to move past aggressive shouting, finger pointing, name calling, and our own deluded assuredness. It is time for us to move beyond intellectual posturing in order to embrace the nakedness of our humility, a humility that could embrace the other and consider that there might be some truth that is hidden from us, truth that we cannot yet see. And we can only get to that place by removing our cloaks of confidence and assuredness. Undressing ourselves involves letting go of stereotyping and diminishing those on the other side, whatever that side is, long enough to hear what it is that they are really saying, to hear one another. So I've just come back from South Africa, and my mum turns 95 in May. And we saw her 5 times, took her out for dinner, visited her in her home a number of times. And the last time I visited with her, just before, the day before I flew out, I'm sitting in her, what you would call sitting room, and I would call lounge. And I said to her, she says to me, "Milt, I turned 95 in May. Imagine that. Why do you think God has allowed me to live so long? I feel purposeless. I want to go home. There's nothing left for me to do." I said to her, "Mom, we've had this discussion before. There is one thing left for you to do. Remind me again, what is it?" "Mom, your relationship with me is fine. Your relationship with my brother is fine. But your relationship with my 67-year-old sister is abominable. You have been at war from the time that she was 2 years old." And she responds, "Yes, but that girl." 67-year-old girl, by the way. "Yes, but that girl." I said, "Mom, you're going nowhere. When you start with 'yes, but that girl,' you're going nowhere. Mom, I could be hit by a bus tomorrow, but the odds are you going home before me. Lay down your need to be right and be the least and make it right with her so that when you get there, he can look at you and say, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. Receive your inheritance.'" And she actually said, "Yes, I'll do it." We need to do that stuff. We need to do that stuff. You see, sometimes when we feel we're not being heard properly, we raise our voices and we say things that we don't really mean, only to regret them later. To put it bluntly, we behave badly, right? We behave like babies. In order to hear each other, at times we have to get past the tone to hear the heart, lest we remain battling in the superficial realm of rhetoric. And that requires hearing one another. And hearing one another requires conversation, not canceling culture, and not canceling a voice that is different from yours. "I refuse to speak to you." That is not the way of Jesus. It's certainly not the way of Vineyard churches. That is the way of children. It's children who go, "You're not my best friend anymore. I'm not speaking to you." Is that right? I'm an emotional wreck. Sorry. It's Bill Bullard who says, opinion is really the lowest form of human knowledge. It requires no accountability, no understanding. The highest form of knowledge is empathy. Because empathy requires me to suspend my ego and my need to be right and to live in another person's world. It requires profound purpose larger than the self kind of understanding. Can we find our way through this dense forest of misinformation and our chosen experts, whoever they are, to see and reach beyond our own view and feel the weight of the middle? Are we mature enough to do that? Lord, have mercy upon us. Now, I appreciate that it's difficult for us because some of us believe that we see very clearly on the issue. We believe we have God's corner on the truth. Now, to the degree that we see the core concerns on both sides, well, they're more than two sides, really, is the degree to which we will posture ourselves in humility. That is the Jesus way. And that is the way we as a church have chosen, is the way of humility. And I want to bless you that during the past 2 years, division has never been an issue in this church. Bless you. The Lord bless you. There are many other churches that I've been involved in during this time in trying to help where that has not been the case. Bless you. Bless your hearts for not allowing division in this place. I'm going to take a shot at defining what I think two of the core issues are and some of the values are of some of the sides as best I understand them. They involve really competing values. And it appears to be the historical battle of personal freedom on the one hand versus neighborly love on the other hand. On one side, it's perceived that what began as an outstretched hand attempting to protect society now feels like the cunning and insidious overreach of government power sneaking and snaking its way into our freedoms. So those advocating for personal freedom are not necessarily against neighborly love. Rather, they see neighborly love as a Trojan horse that is being used that the powers and principalities are hiding within. In other words, from that perspective, this is just the excuse being used in order to gain greater control over us. And if that is true, of course, that would be deeply concerning. They feel that their personal freedom is being ambushed in the name of neighborly love. They fear that government overreach in the pandemic is not just about the pandemic. Rather, it's about conditioning us to be more willing to give up personal freedoms when this is all over. And if that is true, it is deeply concerning. They feel that many of the mandates are an overreach in the guise of protection to a different ultimate agenda. I freely confess before you this morning that that is the side I have erred to during this past 2 years. I have erred to that side. My excuse is simply that I come out of totalitarianism. Apartheid was a totalitarian ideology. And what came out of the mouths of Canadian politicians and indeed our Prime Minister over the past 2 years and more recently frightened me, and it all but petrified my wife. We've heard this all before, rightly or wrongly. It frightened us because it sounded so incredibly similar to the apartheid voices that we grew up under. Lord, have mercy upon us. The voices that for us were stilled some 30 years ago, and here they were again, those voices threatening us with punitive measures if we refused to comply and to submit. It's been extremely hard for everyone, but I want you to think about this. If you see where most of the rebellion is coming from, it's from people who come out of the Eastern Bloc or out of places like South Africa, where they have actually experienced totalitarian government and they are frightened. Bear with them. They're frightened. Then there's some people who have cooperated with government restrictions, like we have here, by masking, being vaccinated, complying with government mandates, doing the whole social or physical distancing thing, as we've done over here, only not to see the changes that they were promised as a result. They wanted the government to reconsider different strategies to tackle the pandemic, which were actually there, but the government ignored. They wanted them to consider different ways of doing this. Then there are other people on the extreme opposite end who have pleaded for the priority of neighborly love and who have felt that the impact of those wanting free will and choosing not to be vaccinated has slowed the speed at which the pandemic could have been behind us. These are all different perspectives. They believe that when personal freedom is prioritized over neighborly love, a lack of community responsibility towards those who are health compromised and those who are vulnerable is the result. They felt that mandating vaccinations would protect us all and would propel society out of the pandemic faster. All of these perspectives, I'm not going to say both, all of these perspectives, because there are multiple views, have points worthy of consideration, right? They all have points worthy of consideration. I know many people who, although vaccinated themselves, have stood with those fighting for personal freedom and those who are choosing to remain unvaccinated. That's who I currently am, because in order to return to Canada, I had to be vaccinated. But I will still stand with those who are unvaccinated if their consciences dictate that they are unable to comply. Because we stand with the marginalized. We have to. Everyone is welcome here. Everyone is welcome here. Everyone is welcome here. Everyone is welcome here. Now, as we do that, in order to stand against the frightening potential of a two-tier society, as we side with those who are marginalized, we're living the gospel of Jesus Christ because he stands with the marginalized. Nothing is clear-cut here. Nothing. Nothing is clear-cut here. We will see in hindsight. Lord, have mercy on us. Then there are those on both sides and all sides and every side who have been totally overtaken by anxiety. People who have said to me, we will never, ever come back to in-person church ever again. Completely overtaken by anxiety. Anxiety rules their hearts, and they've built a case not necessarily from science or logic or intellect or even conviction or conscience, but from a place of how do I manage my anxiety? They've chosen the side that offers them the most protection from their own anxiety. For some, that has been personal freedom. For others, it has been neighborly love. These are all the perspectives and all the different people groups. And then, of course, there is the small matter of the government and its media. I mean, let's be honest. The legacy media is anything but objective and unbiased. And I think possibly best I leave it just there. Right? Let's just leave it at that. And that is deeply disturbing as somebody considering Canadian citizenship. My father worked for the South African Broadcasting Corporation, who was nothing other than the apartheid mouthpiece. And for me to see that in action again is disturbing. It is disturbing. So this societal divide, I've just given you a few insights into it, which you know anyway, is real. It's real for sure. But the question for us is it bridgeable? I want you to look to your left and look to your right. And spend some time doing that. Look to your left, look to your right, look behind you and look in front of you. And I'm going to remind you again that we are called upon to love one another. Love each other. Love one another. The side that you choose is fully yours to choose. But don't expect that everybody's going to choose what you've chosen. And for the sake of Jesus and his kingdom, do not under any circumstances ever demonize the other when they don't choose what you have chosen. Don't you do that. Don't we do that. Don't do that. In the name of Jesus, we will not do that. Lord, have mercy on us. If we can reach across this great Berlin Wall dividing East and West and embrace the other, not as my enemy, but one who carries a different conviction, I think we will see a greater light in the middle. Because darkness very often hides in the shadows and in the corners and at the edges. It would be remiss of me to say that in all arguments, there are those who hold extreme and extremely speculative views. Loud, obnoxious, aggressive voices, lone wolves, and those who are only able to hear their own voice and to see their own view and to hear those who actually echo that view. And we can unfairly let those voices be the defining voices of the majority when they clearly are not. When we let the far fringes define the issues at play, then we disregard the majority voice and diminish and devalue each other rather than entering true dialogue. When we define the majority by the extremes, we increase frustration in the system and we force the divide, which is why I have not understood why voices speaking against this have been silenced. Bring it into the public realm and talk, debate. Censorship has never resolved anything, anywhere, ever. The Vineyard Way, I'm talking a little bit about us now, is conversational. Come and talk. When you close yourself to that possibility, regardless of what the issues are, you close yourself to letting Jesus in. He says it himself in the Gospel of Luke. Jesus replied, "What does the law of Moses say?" Disciples muttered. He said, "How do you read it?" Let's talk. Let's have a conversation. What's your interpretation? Let's talk about it. When we're open to hearing one another, we posture ourselves in the spirit of humility rather than the spirit of war. And in the spirit of humility, we will build bridges. When we assume a spirit of war, we posture as the one who is right and burn any possibility of building a bridge between us. And one of the greatest lessons I've learned in life is that I become the very thing that I fight against when I don't embrace the posture of humility. I've told you many stories about the church I previously pastored, Kenilworth Vineyard Church. I'll tell you another one. I might have told this to you before. I can't remember. I've been here a while now, so I forget. When I laid down the call to that church, I heard God say to me one morning, "Step aside." And I stepped aside and I threw my family into 3 years of chaos. 3 years of financial chaos, spiritual chaos, emotional chaos. And the home that we were in, Betty's Bay, the home that we eventually lost to the fire, I used to cycle quite a lot. So one morning I get on my bicycle, I've got my backpack on, and I've got my Bible in my backpack, and I'm sitting in the bush praying. I used to cycle out 20 kilometers and then listen to the Lord and come back. And I'm praying. And I say, "Lord, why did you allow this to happen? Why did you allow this to happen? We were flying. The church was 350 people and an upward growth curve." Now, part of the reason that I'd left the Vineyard at that time was I regarded, rightly or wrongly, some of the national leaders in South Africa is extremely arrogant. And that's why I stepped out. And when I asked God, "Why did you let this happen?" I heard an answer from the Holy Spirit as clear as a bell to prevent you from becoming the very thing that you react against. That's our nature. Hopefully I'm past that now. That's our nature. Society very easily encourages us to fight, but very rarely offers us skills for how to do it well. We don't do conflict resolution well. Often we lack the skills for peacemaking. Christmas Eve 2021, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. That was our Christmas Eve message for 2021. A call to peacemaking. We can do this better. The pandemic is passing and nearing its end. We can do this better. I will tell you the same story that I told on Christmas Eve to bring this to a close. My old colleague, Harry Wiggett, Anglican priest, lots of teeth, very, very toothy. My children used to say he could eat a pie through a tennis racket. Harry, in his clerical garb, soaking wet, could not have weighed more than 65 kilograms. And he was in a place called Tilbach in the Western Cape in the middle of the apartheid demonstrations. And he's driving from church one morning in full cassock and surplice in his VW Beetle, Anglican priest. And he drives down a street where he finds five African men armed with spears and bricks about to kill a uniformed South African policeman that they'd separated from his platoon. And he climbs all 62 kilos of him onto the bonnet and he stands up and he says, "Stop, stop, stop. Whoever among you is without sin, cast the first stone." And one by one, each of those African men dropped their stones, lowered their spears, and walked away. That is a peacemaker. Everyone is frustrated. Everyone is exhausted by this shared experience. The never-ending conflict over what is true and what is not has worn us all down to the bone. Bridges have been burned. Relationships have been fractured, even within families, and most of those unnecessarily. I invite you to undress as you choose your side. Take off the robe of confidence and step into the true light of the uncertainty that we all face. I'm going to close with that scripture, Joshua 5:13. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and he saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" "Neither," he replied, "but as a commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, "What message does my Lord have for his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place that you stand, the place that you and I stand, is holy ground." For Jesus, there are no countries to be conquered, no ideologies to be imposed, and no people to be dominated. For Jesus, there are only children, women, and men to be loved. Let's love one another. I'm going to invite you to stand as we worship again. Not yet, Ben. Okay, I'm going to invite you to worship with us. And then also what we'd like to do this morning is I'd like to invite you, if you want to receive prayer over any of this, over the, anything else as well, but particularly the past 2 years. When we finished worshiping, we're going to start moving back again into time of ministry. We will actually close the service before we do that. So we're going to sing together in worship. Then I'll close the service in prayer, and then we will go into a time of ministry. The Lord be with you. Please stand with us. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. We hope you can join us again next time. Be blessed.